In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Last week, we focused on the fear the Democrats and the far left are pushing, trying to scare you into not voting for Republicans. Because when you don't have a record you can be proud of, you go with fear. I even predicted in my closer, quote, Democrats will cross the border from fear-mongering into panic-mongering, which will make you laugh out loud as long as you're aware of it. And right on cue, a historian was on MSNBC a couple days ago and said this, 50 years from now, a historian, if historians are allowed to write in this country, and if there are still free publishing houses and a free press, which I'm not certain of, a historian will say what was at stake tonight and this week was whether we will be a democracy in the future, whether our children will be arrested and, conceivably, killed. We're on the edge of a brutal authoritarian system, and it could be a week away. There it is, the panic mongering. If you vote for Republicans, your kids will be murdered and democracy will die. This is our last show before the election, and while you may not be able to vote for the candidates that we have on today directly, our hope is that you will get a glimpse of what could be should they and other Republicans get voted into office. Meanwhile, the left is desperately trying to blame the problems they caused on Republicans. They do this because they assume voters are stupid with short memories. Sorry, Democrats, what you have done wasn't an accident. It was on purpose. The Democrats celebrated when Biden shut down the Keystone Pipeline, and that was just the start of their policy horror show. No, there is one way and only one way forward at this point, and that is for voters to remove from power the ones who purposefully unleashed all of this. And don't ever let them near the reins of power ever again. They have abused power. They will abuse power if you let them back in. I'd like to welcome U.S. Congressman Bruce Westerman to the show. He is out here in Oregon from Arkansas, representing their 4th Congressional District. He is here in Oregon to visit and support Alex Garlatos running in Oregon's 4th Congressional District. Congressman, it's great to talk to you.
Mark, great to be on your show today. I appreciate you taking some time to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the reasons I know that you're out here visiting Alec is because you're supporting him, but also you're the only certified forester in the House. I assume there are none in the Senate. So how different would things be in Congress if we had fewer lawyers and more foresters and others with actual blue-collar work experience?
Well, I think that would be a great addition to Congress. I tell people often that I've got the two worst educational experiences probably to serve in Congress. My undergraduate degrees in engineering, and I studied forestry in graduate school. So engineers think with logic and reason, and foresters look at long-term horizons, and that's not often appreciated in Congress. But we really need to get some more common sense people in Congress, and that's why I'm out here trying to help Alec out and get him across the finish line, because the country needs him.
Absolutely.
And we need him to get a Republican majority so that we can push policies that are good for America.
So back in 2017, you introduced the Resilient Federal Forest Act. This would provide for the thinning of overgrown federally managed woods. It passed in the House, but of course Republicans had control back then. Was introduced in the Senate, where it stalled because of opposition from Democrats who lobbied by anti-logging environmentalists. So do all of these elected Democrats who claim to be environmentalists, do they not get that letting trees just sit there and grow and rot harms the whole forest? Because that's what we see going on here in Oregon and how they vote on the far left.
Now, Mark, that's a great point. And I get tired of Republicans being called science deniers.
Yes.
When bills like the Resilient Federal Forest Act were promoting good science. And we make a management decision on the forest every day, whether we choose to go in and thin the forest or whether we choose to take a hands-off approach and let Mother Nature manage the forest. They're always changing. And the trees don't care what policies come out of Washington, D.C. They're going to grow, fill the growing space. Mm-hmm. If they get overpopulated, you get insects and disease, or you get wildfire, or a combination of that. And it's devastating to our forest. So You can't just take a hands-off approach. You can't preserve forests. They're living, dynamic, growing organisms. So it's our responsibility to be good stewards and manage them so that we have a healthy, vibrant forest, which means cleaner air, cleaner water, better recreation opportunities, more wildlife habitat. It's always a win-win-win situation when you have healthy forests.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm promoting as the forester in Congress. And I know Alec is, I'll let him speak for himself, but I'm pretty sure he's aligned on those ideas of how we can have conservation and how we can have a strong economy and a healthy environment all at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. Having spoken with Alec, we know that he supports all of that. You know, many people, myself included, think that the federal government should not own these forests. For one, the federal government does a terrible job managing them. 2 years ago, the major forest fires in Oregon and on the West Coast, all but one of them, I think, started on federal land where they were just allowed to burn until they got out of control and then, surprise, surprise, spread into state and private forests and burn them down for good measure. But second, it's not in the Constitution that the federal government can have all of this sprawling lands. They're supposed to own land for only for post offices, roads, official buildings, and military bases. But putting aside the constitutionality of it, states are always going to be doing a better job of maintaining these forests because the forests are within those states' borders, which means they're going to be responsible and responsive to local interests to take care of them. And so they're just going to do always, they're always going to do a better job taking care of them than some bureaucrat from Connecticut who has no idea what real mountains and real forests look like. So let's say that that Republicans get control of Congress here in 2022. Should there be a move to divest the federal government of these lands and cede them to the state, as was promised at statehood? And what do you think would be the reaction in Congress if such a bill were introduced?
Well, you bring up a great point there. I don't know that we can reel that back in where we take federal lands and divest the federal lands. If you look across the country from East Coast to West Coast, you almost see a gradient of federal ownership of land, with it being obviously higher on the western side of the country. But you bring out a great point how these federal lands are mismanaged. It's obvious in the statistics. It's obvious in the data and what's happening out in the field that we see much worse fires on federal lands, Forest Service, BLM, than we do on private lands adjacent to those federal lands, and on state lands adjacent to those federal lands, and on tribal lands even that are adjacent to these federal lands. So the problem is in management. And I'm going to take up for the Forest Service a little bit, because there's a lot of good people that work for the Forest Service, but they're in a bureaucracy
right
that doesn't allow them to do their job. So what we've tried to do in Congress, and a lot of the stuff I've worked on, is give these folks the tools to do their job. And also through programs like the Good Neighbor Authority, let state entities contract with the federal government to manage the federal land. Because generally the state forestry groups can manage land properly. They know how to do it. And we need to clear the path so that their land managers that know how to do it, that can get the job done, can go in and do the work. And we would all benefit from that with healthier forests.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break a little bit early here. We're talking with Congressman Bruce Westerman from Arkansas. He's out here in Oregon to support Alec Skarlatos and his bid for Oregon CD4. We'll bring Alec on next. Stay with us. And welcome back. We've been talking with Congressman Bruce Westerman from Arkansas. He's visiting Oregon to support Alec Skarlatos, who is running in Oregon's CD4. That's the southwest coast and mid-coast, inland to Eugene and southwest of Salem. And Alec is joining us now, too. Alec, it's great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting that Congressman Westerman is out here because things are not looking good for Democrats this year, even here in Oregon. And we've had a number of high-profile Democrats visit to try to rally the troops. But what's really funny, ironically funny when you think about it, is they keep meeting in Portland or Eugene. So if you think about that, you've got all these Democrats going to these rallies. They have to drive past all of these homeless camps, ruined and shattered, shuttered businesses, to get to a political rally in support of the very people who created this mess. So, Congressman, did you happen to drive past any of these mass homeless camps on your way in?
Yeah, I saw a lot of that. Saw it in Portland, saw it on the along the interstate. And, you know, I was in California last week, and I saw it down there. One of the ironies to it is I've been meeting with some of the federal land managers about more public access for camping. And I said it's strange that all these people are camping along the interstate and in the cities, and they can't camp out in the in the forest.
Yeah, well, that is kind of ironic. Alec, how bad are things in terms of these homeless camps? How bad are they in Eugene? I don't usually get down there.
Well, I believe Eugene has the highest homelessness rate per capita in the entire country. So for the size city that Eugene is, it's very bad. But no, I agree completely. I mean, it's incredibly ironic that Democrats are trying to rally support for the policies that brought us all this failed leadership. I mean, again, 45, 48 years in the state on some positions have been Democrat, and they really can't pass the buck to Republicans anymore. And that's why I think we have a great shot at winning this year.
Oh, I certainly think so as well. So Democrats and their spending has created a huge problem with all this debt and essentially no ability to fight back against inflation. Congressman Westerman, you voted with Biden only 8% of the time. Did any Democrats in the House effectively or realistically try to push back on some of these big, massive spending bills? And if not, did they truly believe that spending trillions was somehow never going to hurt the economy?
Well, you shocked me there to know that I voted with Biden 8% of the time. I had to go back and.
Well, there's some, probably some park or something that got named.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. But no, they just wouldn't listen. Democrat economists, people from the Obama administration, tried to tell them, you're triggering inflation. You're going to cause problems that don't need to be caused, and you're bringing it all up on yourself. And they just, like with blinders on, went full steam ahead voting for all these spending bills. And it wasn't just one, it was multiple bills.
Right.
And they tried to do the big, you know, they called it the Build Back Better. I called it Build Back Beijing. Had that one passed, it would have been horrible. I mean, the ones they passed were bad enough, but some of the stuff they passed out of the House that thankfully they couldn't get through the Senate would have been even worse.
Alec, what are the voters in your district expecting? Are they expecting government to start downsizing in order to control spending? I mean, what are you hearing from the voters there?
I mean, I don't think anyone is expecting government to get any smaller under this administration. This is the poorest congressional district in the state. This runaway inflation and high interest rates and high gas prices affect us more than almost anywhere else. Definitely in Oregon, at least. And so we just can't afford any more of these bad policies. And we know that that's the direction that the Democrats want to take us down, whether it be on the state or federal level. And so we have to fight back and stand up.
Well, Congressman Westerman, you're on the Committee for Transportation and Infrastructure. Are there real problems with our supply chain that transportation providers are predicting will happen if we don't start bringing down these fuel prices or some of the other issues?
There are major problems, and I want to go back to something Alec was talking about with inflation and high cost with gas and with food. You know, that the people that affects the most are fixed income and low income.
Right.
And that describes a lot of my constituents back home in Arkansas. They're the ones that are feeling the brunt of these Democrat spending proposals. And what we're seeing with transportation is you know, I haven't talked to anybody in the past 2 years that says they can find truck drivers easy. I haven't talked to anybody in the transportation business that says fuel costs aren't hurting the cost of delivered goods. But energy is kind of a bedrock of our economy. And when those prices go up, it affects everything. And, you know, we're seeing double-digit inflation on food and natural gas is the main ingredient in nitrogen fertilizer, which is the main ingredient in agriculture. So as you see gas prices go up, you're going to see food costs go up across the board with multipliers added on it because nitrogen fertilizer is used in so many of the things that we grow. So these energy policies are really hurting our country. We see it at the gas pump. But we're also feeling it in the grocery store, and people are going to feel it even worse this winter when the heating bills come in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You've got places like New England saying they may be running dry on natural gas and whatnot. It's really frightening what this administration has led us to. Alec, can you comment on what you're hearing there in CD4 around the economy, but especially what you're hearing from voters in and around Eugene about the economy? Because I get the sense that most of Coos Bay and the Southwest Coast is going to be there for you, but it's those Eugene voters that have been added to that district. How do you convince people in Eugene to vote against Democrats who got us into this mess?
Well, you really just have to win them on the issues that they care about. And, you know, you can't run too far to either side of the aisle in this district in particular. And so you have to win them on things that are common sense. And right now, everyone knows that Democrats caused the inflation. Democrats caused high gas prices. Democrats have caused a lot of our problems that we're facing in this state. Again, they can't pass the buck anymore. So people are now looking for an alternative party. And we just have to be the party of common sense and reason and just say, hey, you know, I'm only concerned with fixing the economy. I'm only concerned with getting us back on the right track. You know, you just don't want to scare away a lot of these voters who want to vote for you. And so that's our main goal, is just appealing to people on very common sense issues. I mean, the cost of living has gone up exponentially and wages have not gone up to match it.
No.
And like Congressman Westerman was saying, you know, it's incredibly hard to find truck drivers. People aren't getting the amount of goods that they're used to. They're having to pay a lot more money for most everything that they buy nowadays. We are just absolutely headed in the wrong track as a state and as a country, and people are looking to get off that track.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Alec, we want to thank you so much for your time today, and Congresswoman Westerman, thank you also, and thank you for coming out to Oregon to support Alec. We really want to see Alec get across the finish line and join you there in Congress.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's great to be on your show, and I just encourage everybody that cares about the future, that cares about the high cost of energy and the bad direction that this country's been taken by singular Democrat rule in Congress and in the White House, to get out and vote for Alec.
Yes, absolutely.
To know your vote counts, call your friends, call your neighbors, and encourage everyone to go out and make their voice heard.
Well, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. And thanks, Congressman Westerman.
Great to be with you. Y'all have a good day.
Alec Scarlatos running in CD4. Let's be sure to turn that one red. And 5 and 6, of course, as well. Coming up, Ben Edel and Kim Rice, two Oregon Senate candidates who personally bore the brunt of the Democrat singular rule. You want to hear their stories, and those are coming up next. Ben Edel is running for Oregon State Senator in District 19. He is also a part of the election integrity lawsuit Chuck Weiss talked about last week, and he is a business owner who personally felt the brunt of Democrat COVID policies and other policies as well. But pretty much all you need to know about Ben to vote for him can be found in a quote on his website. Quote, "The politicians who created the humanitarian crisis in Oregon cannot be relied on to fix it." And that is absolutely right and would definitely get my vote. But of course, we want to talk to him about much more than a quote. Ben, it's good to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I met you in person at a birthday party for a mutual friend and got to know some of your story and what you went through. But tell our audience about your businesses pre-COVID and pre all of the Antifa nonsense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, I've been an entrepreneur for my whole career since my early 20s. But in 2018, I took over what should have been a bankrupt specialty coffee roastery, and we turned it around, and I indemnified the owner of the debt that he had. It was a huge amount of debt. And we just worked hard and you know, did smart business as best we could, and we grew the company. And by 2020, we had moved from an 800 square foot coffee roastery to a 4,500 square foot coffee roastery, and we had three cafes that we acquired that were also turnarounds that we had, you know, started growing. And going into 2020, I mean, we were in a tough position because we were aggressively trying to grow the businesses, so all of our cash was just going back into the businesses, and we were growing at about 40% every single month, year over year, when the first lockdowns came. And so, you know, we had put everything into it, and we probably had amassed about $1 million worth of assets in general, total business value. And it by November of 2020, it disintegrated into thin air.
Wow. So
yeah,
talk to us a little bit more in detail about what happened when the Democrat policies of crime is just fine, you know, with Antifa and all that. And then later COVID came into full effect. So what exactly happened then?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go back into the records, you're going to see that 8 people in the state of Oregon died with COVID-19, supposedly, when Kay Brown did the famous 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Yeah.
And so when that happened, I was mortified. I'd never expected anything like that to happen in this country, to where, you know, our businesses would be essentially locked down, our kids would be locked down, we would be locked down. That just absolutely, that's something I never, ever saw coming. And so in a 72-hour period after that happened, we lost our entire supply chain. So we had a roastery that was wholesaling coffee from Portland to Las Vegas to cafes, and pivoted our business, the roastery side, to just focus on specialty coffee cafes. And so that's really what grew the business. And so within a 72-hour period of time, every single one of our accounts from Portland to Las Vegas temporarily closed out of uncertainty. Okay, that's what they said. But we lost all of our business in 72 hours. And so only one of them so far, one of the accounts in Las Vegas reopened. The rest of them, they were all gone forever. They couldn't turn the lights back on. So we had our 3 cafes, and we fought to keep them open. And because I knew that if we closed those cafes, we'd be out of business. It would be just very quick. It would be a couple of weeks before we were bankrupt. And by keeping the cafes open, I was attacked online, personally attacked online. Like, my reputation was attacked. People called me a murderer. People said I was killing people.
Wow.
They called me a racist, a homophobe. They said I had white privilege. And to be honest with you, I'm a Portland native, born and raised in the inner city. I've lived there my whole life. And I could not comprehend what was actually happening. And it dawned on me, and I fought back a little bit. I said, hey, I'm not killing people. I'm serving lattes and we're open. Come on down. So that was kind of my response. And because I couldn't even take it seriously. It was so weird. It just made no sense.
Yeah.
And so
it was like,
you know,
this madness had gripped everybody.
Yeah, and it really did. It gripped everybody, and I think every business owner was terrified. And there was a couple other business owners in Portland that spoke out, and, you know, they got canceled. And I remember one of them, you know, a very, very well-known restaurateur, you know, checked himself into a mental hospital because he was just going crazy. He was losing his mind. And I knew what he was going through but I honestly stood up to it the whole way. I said, no way. I'm not putting the signs up on our doors. I'm not making people wear masks. I'm not wearing a mask, that's for sure. And people began to cancel me. And so then it was like, we would get the calls when George Floyd happened. We would get calls into our businesses, and BLM people would be threatening if we didn't put a BLM sign in our windows that they were going to smash our windows.
Wow. So did they?
That was early on. That was right after George Floyd, and the riots came, and, you know, I knew downtown Portland was done. I knew it was toast. I was like, it's never going to come back from this.
Mm-hmm.
And we started walking from cafes, just leaving them, entire investments that we just walked from.
Wow.
And, it was crazy, and I would not put the BLM signs up. In fact, I would walk into a cafe, and I'd see our staff had put BLM signs in the window. I'd take them down. And then my staff turned on me after that and, you know, called me a racist and went online. And it was a wild time. And they did. They smashed our windows. I remember pulling in one morning and seeing fascist written across the front of one of our cafes on Division in 12-foot font. I mean, it was just crazy. But they had spray-painted and vandalized every business that we had. But I wouldn't shut up. I wouldn't stop.
So we only got about a minute here with you.
Yep.
Looking back at that, you were the one in the right. So
I was. I knew I was.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, we got a minute. So let me just explain something. In November, I was on the verge of total mental breakdown. It was about 2 in the morning. I was having a crisis. And I called some people, but no one answered. My wife was asleep. I went down to my cafe in the middle of the night, and I got on my knees and I said, God, what the F do you want me to do? And the answer that came back was, why are you fighting this hard to save a few jobs when you could just walk from this and go into politics and you could save 100,000 jobs? And I opened up, my heart opened up. I realized what I needed to do. I needed to let this go, and I needed to turn around and fight full blast against this, what I believe is a communist insurrection.
Yeah. If it's not, it certainly looks like one. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break here. Ben has a great video on the front page of his website, Ben Edel, that's EDTL, BenEdel.com. You'll definitely want to go see that. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue with Ben after this. And welcome back. We're talking to Ben Edel. He's running for Senate, the state Senate in District 19. That's in the, if you were to split Portland down the middle, it's due south of there, down to Lake Oswego, Tualatin, and east of Wilsonville over to the Willamette. And so, Ben, we were talking during the break there about you getting all kinds of threats, death threats and more. What's your opponent, incumbent Ron Wagner, been up to? I mean, how has anything that he's done improved the situation there in your district?
Well, Rob Wagner hasn't done anything to improve the situation. Look, the crisis in Oregon is absolutely engineered by the Democrats in power in Salem. Even all the way down to District Attorney, Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt, who's everyone's very upset with because he, you know, people get arrested for rape and armed robbery and murder, and he lets them right out of jail, the catch and release.
Yep.
But that catch and release is actually enabled by Senate Bill 48, which Rob Wagner passed just last year to enable Mike Schmidt to do that. Otherwise, Mike Schmidt would be breaking the law and he'd be shut down. And so Rob Wagner and Mike Schmidt worked together to enable the release of criminals without bail. Measure 11 criminals, by the way, without bail. So look, the homeless crisis, the education crisis, the financial crisis in Oregon has all been totally engineered. Rob Wagner passed 27 bills just last year, okay, that doubled and tripled the cost of every single thing Oregonians buy, from medicine to fuel to groceries and clothing, all the things that we depend on the most. And now Oregon is the fifth most expensive state to live in the country, and it's Oregon. And the crime bills, there's 17, 18 bills that literally prevent the police from protecting community citizens in their communities, and they prevent citizens from even protecting themselves. 16 bills. And as a result of that, Portland now has 91 murders, okay? Right now, as of today, we have 91 murders in our city. To give you some comparison there, Seattle right now has 58, okay? Seattle is a 2 million person city, and Portland is a, 700,000-800,000 person city.
Right, right.
So this is absolutely inexcusable, but it all starts with the state legislature. And Rob Wagner, he's the Democrat Senate leader. That means he's responsible for shaping the entire legislative agenda for the whole state. So he's the guy that has to be taken down.
Mm. Well, so after you were driven out of business by the woke mob and the woke policies, I know that you started Free Oregon there. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
So in January of 2021, I founded Free Oregon, right? I was done, and I didn't have very many people with me, okay? There was nobody with me. I just started Free Oregon on my own. I thought, I'm going to gather as many Oregonians who are like-minded as possible. I want this to be nonpartisan, bipartisan, whatever you want to call it. I don't care who it is, but these are people that are going to come together to push back against this tyranny is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
So we started out by doing these Monday night virtual town halls every Monday night. And the first town hall we did to gather people had 8 people on it. We had 8 people. And then after that, it became 12 to 24. And then when the vaccine mandates came, the October 19th vaccine mandates on nurses, doctors, firefighters, teachers, police officers, government workers, when that hit, we began to start having thousands of people every single week tune in and watch these town halls, and our Zooms were full at 300 people every single Monday, and we raised about $170,000, and we took Kate Brown and Pat Allen to federal court. We took the Oregon State Board of Nursing to federal court. And so we have all these cases going. We also took other civil rights, like corporate civil rights violators, to federal court too. And every single one of our cases, I think we have 6 cases in federal court right now, they're all proceeding through the Ninth Circuit Court, and some of these are going to go to the Supreme Court, and they're going to change the law to protect the First Amendment rights of every American.
Well, it's looking good now when you look at places like New York City that threw out their vaccine mandates, and that set a precedent for you guys, and so that's all looking very positive. Portland used to be such a beautiful city.
Yeah.
What do the suburbs now think of things? And are they connecting what has happened to Portland with the Democrats who put these policies in place?
Yeah, I think so. I think the regular people, I think Republicans are more naturally, I don't know, skeptical of the government, right? This is the way our brains are wired. I think Democrats are a lot less skeptical of the government. I think they believe inherently that the government is a good thing and the government helps people. And so it's harder for people left of center, I think, to grasp this concept that the government is hurting us, that the government is causing it. And so the government is playing that up and trying to do all kinds of things, like you see with Joe Biden saying that it's MAGA Republicans, you know, it's a danger to democracy, that we're the threat. We're not the threat. They're the threat. And I think most people in the suburbs are realizing it, because in Oregon, there's a supermajority and there's no checks and balances. There's a one-party system here. And everybody that understands that this is a one-party system knows that that one party, when they blame the other party for the problems, they're literally just deflecting their own doing. And trying to avoid taking responsibility for that. And that's why, McLeod Skinner and Rob Wagner, they put independent party on their voter pamphlets, because they're trying to hoodwink the voters into thinking people are independents. They're not. They're hardcore radical leftists, and they've committed some crazy social experiments on Oregon, especially in the Portland metro area. And I think most people are awake to that. So I'm hoping that most people are awake to that, because if they are, then I'm going to win this election.
Yeah, well, if you win, your big issues are the economy, small business, and civil rights. If elected, how would you improve along those lines? We've only got about a minute here with you.
Yeah, I think, well, the first thing we need to do is repeal SB 48. We got to make sure that local law enforcement agencies can police. There's about 12 to 16 bills that I'd like to repeal right away. And then I think that our public schools is another just travesty in our state. My opponent, Rob Wagner, is the big teachers union guy. And under his watch and his policies, 70% of kids in Oregon can't test proficient in math at grade level math, and 60% can't read and write at grade level. I mean, this is absolutely a shame. The parents have been thrown out of the schools, and we need to bring the parents back, and we need to get some common sense. We need to have local control over our public schools and even bring in school choice. But public safety...
Well, common sense at all levels of government, whether it's public safety or the schools, is absolutely desperately needed. Ben, I want to thank you so much for your time. His website one more time, benedl.com. Edel is EDTL, benedl.com.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome Kim Rice to the show. She is a school teacher who had seen enough of what was happening in our schools and our kids and decided to run for Oregon State Senate in District 18. That's in Washington County, the south portion of Portland and stretching southwest to the suburbs of Tigard and Beaverton. Kim, it's great to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, on your website, Kim Rice for Oregon, F-O-R, KimRiceForOregon.com, your intro video, which is really very powerful and well done, it says you were a teacher for 27 years until unconstitutional government overreach separated you from your students and families. So tell our audience what happened.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. So what happened was, is I did not want to turn in any type of my personal private information to my employer here in the Beaverton area, a local school district. And I basically decided I was not going to comply. And what played into my decision was the agendas that were being pushed in our schools with our curriculums. And I'm talking about, you know, the diversity, equity, inclusion, mm-hmm. and also the counseling of our history and the comprehensive sexuality education that were being pushed in. And I taught kindergarten and first grade. So as you could see, I was very startled at some of the things that they were trying to bring into the classroom that were not developmentally appropriate for children. So basically, I just didn't comply, and then I was separated from my classroom. And, you know, I had been on top of politics nationally, but I hadn't been very involved in at the state level. But I got immediately involved in lots of different organizations. And then as things unfolded in February, I realized that I had open seats in my own county, in my own jurisdiction here that hadn't been filled. And I just said, you know, this is the year I have to step up. So as just a regular citizen, I'm not a politician, I'm running to be a stateswoman here for Oregon, I decided to file and run for office. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. It's the government overreach, Mark, that's brought me to this point.
Well, and we are right there with you. The government overreach is pretty much the entirety of our show. You had mentioned there about the ideology that's being pushed on kids, and this is something we hear about all the time, regardless of whether it's Oregon or Virginia or some of these other states. But the types of ideology being pushed on kids, what have you personally seen? Can you give us some specifics on that?
Yes, 2 years ago, so November of 2020, when we were teaching remotely, that means we were forced out of the classroom and we were trying to teach our students through online learning, remote learning, we were told as a staff that we were not going to be teaching American history in November. We were not going to talk about Thanksgiving. Hmm. We were not going to talk about, you know, the early pilgrims and the events surrounding those early American events. And basically, we were told that was racist. Wow. That was a white supremacist, colonialist, and that we were just going to focus high level on gratitude and thankfulness. So what I'm listeners, it's very real what they are doing with our youth. They are erasing our country's history, and you cannot love a country you don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely have to, you know, take this and throw these notions out. This can't hold.
No, you're right. Absolutely not. So that remote learning, when you were pushing in that situation, what kind of impact did you see your students going through as far as their learning is concerned?
Well, it was a really, really rough year. We had to, you know, of course, relearn how to give information to students and how to teach them and reach them, you know, through our devices. But the real truth, Mark, is that we lost learning that year. We were not able to reach a lot of students. And it's because I live and taught in an area where the parents might be out working and there's nobody there to assist the child. So, you know, some kids just didn't even show up. Hmm. And then we had no way to assess if they were learning anything. And, you know, it was such a travesty for our students. And they're still behind. Children are still behind. Wow. And I do want to say, before I was pulled out of my classroom last October in 2021, I had a school social worker come into my classroom unannounced to me and have a community circle with my 22 beautiful kindergartners. And she literally told them that if they felt like they wanted to be a girl, they could be a girl. Wow. And if they felt like they wanted to be a boy, they could be a boy. It had nothing to do with anything that we were learning. I was totally caught unawares that it was even going to happen. And this shouldn't be happening in our schools. It just creates stress and confusion for our children. And parents were out of the school. They weren't even allowed to come in and volunteer. They had no idea this was happening.
Wow.
And it's just, these are the types of things that we have to absolutely stand up against. We need our parents to know this is happening in any type of education system that is getting curriculum from the Oregon Department of Education.
Well, you know, I was so deeply fortunate growing up in the 1980s in a truly good public school. Most of the teachers I knew, and certainly in high school, were either Republican or lean that way, with a couple of exceptions. But they all loved America, no matter which side of the political mm-hmm. aisle they were on. And I look now at the wasteland that has become a public education. And you mm-hmm. just mentioned this notion that they're pushing this kind of sexuality at kindergartners. How on mm-hmm. earth did we get to this point? I mean, this has been so mm-hmm. shocking to me. Looking back at what I went through compared to what they're now doing to kids, I mean, where you have schools that have pornographic books that are so foul an adult can't read them at a public school board meeting to other adults. How do we get here?
Yeah. There has been a systematic attack on our culture, our history, our families, our children, our law and order, every aspect, our human life, women, everything is under attack. It just, the more you look, the more you realize what's going on. And I'd like to know the why, but it just feels like in the last couple of years, it's just been on turbo speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I hindsight's 2020, you can kind of see some things coming on, but it's just the last few years through the pandemic and everything, yeah. how they've really used that as the impetus to push this all in.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd like to pick up on that after we come back from this break. We're talking to Kim Rice. You can find out more by heading to Kim Rice for Oregon. That's F-O-R, KimRiceForOregon.com. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking with Kim Rice. She is a former teacher. She is running for Oregon State Senate in District 18. That's Washington County, the south portion of Portland and stretching southwest to Tigard and Beaverton. And Kim, it was unfortunate that we had the clock break where we did, but this is what has just been driving me nuts, is I look at what is happening in our schools, and somehow in the last couple of years, we have gotten this notion that it's perfectly fine for teachers or schools to push sex at underage kids, as though this is a good thing. I don't understand how we've gotten to this point where they just think it's perfectly fine to push sex at kids. Why is it okay if it happens in the schools, and yet somebody were to do this out on the street? For God's sakes, I would hope that they'd be arrested.
You know, I can't explain it, Mark. I just know that I keep turning around and hearing about these different drag queen story hours that are happening out in public. There was just a huge one in Eugene that garnered national attention. And
riot,
I just don't know what sort of left turn have we made in our society that it's okay to destroy our family and our children and women this way. And, you know, that's what it is. It's a whole attack on our culture. It's very intentional.
Yeah. Well, it feels it. It feels like we've turned from schools as a place of learning to brothels. I mean, I don't understand this focus on education right now, pushing so much sex at kids, and yet somehow they managed to miss math and reading and everything else. So during the break there, you had mentioned HB 3088, and I confess this is a bill I don't know anything about, but apparently it's currently under discussion, and you had wanted to talk about this, so go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mark, we've just got rampant crime, drugs, and homelessness that are issues that we're facing here in the metro area and probably across Oregon as a whole. And now the left is wanting to legalize the sex trade in Oregon. So House Bill 3088 is, it's actually in committee. They wanted to put it through in 2022, but now they're going to try again to put it through. And my Democrat opponent, Campos, Rob Nossi, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, DeCia Graber, those are some of the Democrat people that think it would be a really good idea for our state to legalize pimps and brothels and the sex trade. And I feel like this, again, is a whole nother attack on our women, our sisters, our daughters. We, you know, this is going to be devastating for Oregon if they try to push this through. And it's so important that we change our legislature makeup in Salem so that things like this do not make it through our legislature. So I just want to say, you know, House Bill 3088 sitting in session, and this is why we need to get me elected versus the Democrat, because I am going to put a hard stop to anything like this going through. It would be an absolute no vote. We have enough problem in our state and human trafficking that's already occurring. We don't need to add more fuel to the fire.
No, absolutely not. We only got about 3 minutes and change here with you. So we didn't get a chance to ask Ben Edel this, but if Republicans were to take control of the governor's office and at least shift power in the House and Senate, perhaps even take majority in one or both, what do Republicans need to do if they gain power? What do they need to focus on?
Well, you know, we definitely need to focus on slowing down our government. Every time these Democrats have gone into session, they try to steamroll all of this radical legislation through. Our government is meant to work slowly. So having balance or a majority there, we're going to be able to roll things back. Now, we have different jurisdictions. You know, Drazen would be able to actually undo the cat tax that Kate Brown put in. Our legislature will be able to repeal horrible laws like Measure 110 that legalized hard drugs. You know, we also, you know, Kate Brown last year voted that we don't have any graduation requirements for reading, writing, and math. So we need a legislature that's going to restore learning standards and restore graduation requirements and political agendas like that. And just also to start standing up for doing what's right. We need moral leadership back in our state. So I know we want to work very hard on helping businesses, helping families. We want to restore safety into our neighborhoods. So expect that we are going to hit the ground running, and we've been putting our legislative ideas forth with the caucus there in Salem to start formulating how we're going to be working on those issues.
So aside from legalizing the sex trade, if your opponents were to retake Oregon or expand their party base there, what would Oregon look like if they stayed in control?
We're going to look like a communist state, like socialist. It's exactly their plan.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. So we got about a minute here with you. Do you support the 2024 ballot initiative for real school choice? It's being sponsored by Mark Thielman. This would have the majority of school funding go with that child, whichever educational choice their parents make, whether it's private school or neighboring public school, online or even homeschool.
Absolutely. This state has been wanting school choice for over two decades. It's the Democrats that won't let us get that through. We are absolutely going to get school of choice and money following the student through. We're in the bottom in the nation, Mark. We were like about 47th as far as academic excellence in our country. We have got to turn that around. We need choice to bring the rigor up across the board. Instead of lowering the standards, we need to create that free market competition.
Yes.
And hold our public schools accountable.
Yeah, and what I love about that is it doesn't give just the rich real school choice. It gives everybody real school choice. Kim, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time, and good luck going forward.
Thank you. Kim Rice for Oregon.com. Thank you, everyone.
As I said in the opener, the reason we wanted to have these particular candidates on is to give you an idea of what life could be like under Republican leadership. Sometimes it's hard to envision the unknown, especially when Democrats have done their best for decades to terrify Oregonians about Republicans. They're the party of the rich. They don't care about people, and so on. How exactly have the Democrats shown they care? Is it the more crime? The 200% increase in murder rates? Is it the homelessness? Is it failing your kids? Is it the endless lockdown orders that had no basis in science or common sense? And if you don't think it will happen again, given a chance, remember the Oregon Health Authority made their COVID mandates permanent. They're just choosing not to enforce them for now. I said it last week, it bears repeating. If you want to change the direction this state and this nation is heading, vote Republican this year in every race. Don't vote for the people who created this mess and whose only solution to an abusive relationship is to make you afraid to leave it. Vote for the people who will get you out of it. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.